A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about how he learns, and he realized something that I think a lot of our listeners will recognize. He's built his entire intellectual life around audio. Podcasts while running, audiobooks, our show, and it feels effortless in a way that sitting down with a book never does. But he's wondering whether there's a name for people like him, whether audio-first courses even exist beyond the obvious formats, and whether this preference is actually a genuine advantage or just a comfortable rut he's fallen into. He also wants to know what genres are out there beyond podcasts and audiobooks, and how to use this preference strategically if it turns out to be a real thing.
And the timing on this is perfect, because I've been thinking about exactly this question from the production side. We make an audio-first show. We're audio-first learners ourselves. But I've never actually sat down and asked what that does to how we actually retain things.
So today we're going to give this preference a proper examination. Not to validate it uncritically, we're not here to tell Daniel he's right, but to understand what audio actually does to how we learn, what the research says, and whether knowing your own idiosyncratic preference lets you design a learning system that actually works.
Let's start with the big question. Is there actually such a thing as an auditory learner, or is that just a comforting story we tell ourselves?
I've heard people say I'm a visual learner my whole life. It's one of those things that feels true.
And it's mostly wrong. The learning styles framework, the idea that people learn best when instruction matches their preferred modality, has been pretty thoroughly debunked. The landmark paper here is Pashler and colleagues in 2008. They did a meta-analysis and found no evidence that matching instruction to someone's preferred learning style improves outcomes. None. A more recent study in 2020 from Science Direct confirmed the same thing. Preference doesn't predict performance.
So I can prefer audio all day long, and it doesn't mean I actually learn better through audio.
Correct. The preference is real. You feel it. But it's not a cognitive advantage. It's more like preferring to exercise in the morning versus the evening. The preference is genuine. It affects your consistency, but it doesn't change how your muscles respond to the workout.
That's a useful distinction. So the question isn't whether audio learning is objectively better or worse. It's whether knowing you have this preference lets you design a learning environment that you'll actually stick with.
That's the thesis I want to chase. The preference itself doesn't confer an advantage. But the self-knowledge, knowing that you'll actually finish an audiobook but abandon a paperback, that's operationally useful. And the danger is mistaking the preference for an identity. I'm an auditory learner becomes a cage rather than a lever.
To answer whether audio actually works, we need to look at what happens in your brain when you learn through audio versus text. What's actually different?
The key mechanism is something called the phonological loop. This is a component of working memory that processes auditory information. Alan Baddeley described it in his working memory model, and the capacity is tiny, about 2 seconds of spoken information. That's it, 2 seconds of speech, and then it's gone unless you actively rehearse it.
2 seconds, that's not much.
It's almost nothing. And the phonological loop is serial. It processes information in sequence, one thing after another. Text, by contrast, allows parallel processing. You can scan a page, jump back to a previous paragraph, check a footnote, reread a sentence. Audio is fundamentally linear and transient. Once the words are spoken, they're gone unless you rewind.
Which explains why I sometimes realize I've been listening to a podcast for 10 minutes and have no idea what was said.
Audio demands sustained attention in a way that reading doesn't. With text, you can zone out for a moment and your eyes are still on the page. You can rescan and recover. With audio, if your attention drifts, you've lost that segment permanently unless you reach for the skip back button.
So the thing that makes audio feel effortless, you just press play and it washes over you, might actually be the thing that makes it less effective for retention.
There's a 2013 study in the NCBI database that looked at exactly this. They compared listening to lectures versus reading the same material. Immediate recall was similar. Right after, people remembered about the same amount. But long-term retention was worse for the audio group, especially for complex material. The hypothesis is that the lack of visual anchors and the inability to easily review specific passages makes it harder to consolidate memories.
So, I feel like I'm learning because it's going in, but a week later, less of it's still there.
And there's a name for that feeling, the illusion of fluency. Audio can feel effortless because it reduces cognitive load during encoding. You're not doing the work of decoding text, you're just receiving speech. But that same ease can trick you into thinking you've learned more than you have. The effort is part of what makes learning stick.
That's a grim little irony. The medium that feels most natural might be the one that leaves the shallowest trace.
But wait, it's not all bad. There's a counterpoint here, and it's important. The 2020 Science Direct study I mentioned found something interesting. Audio outperformed text for narrative comprehension and emotional tone retention. If you're listening to a story, you remember the arc, the emotional beats, the sequence of events better than if you'd read it.
That makes intuitive sense. A spoken story lands differently.
It does. And there's a reason for that. Human beings evolved to process spoken language. Writing is a recent invention. We've been talking for hundreds of thousands of years, reading for maybe 5,000. Our brains are wired for oral narrative in a way they're not wired for text. So audio excels at the things oral tradition excels at: stories, emotional resonance, procedural knowledge, language learning.
Procedural knowledge? You mean like instructions?
Yes. If someone tells you how to assemble a piece of furniture, you might retain that better than reading the manual. The phonological loop is directly involved in language acquisition. That's why Pimsleur language courses are audio-first by design. They exploit the phonological loop's role in processing speech sounds and building verbal fluency.
Pimsleur. Those are the ones with the spaced repetition, the listen and repeat format.
Right. And they're one of the rare examples of a learning product designed from the ground up for audio. No textbook, no video, no visual component. Just carefully timed audio prompts with deliberate pauses for the learner to respond. The research shows they work well for spoken fluency. You'll learn to converse. But they're weaker for grammar rules and written language.
Which tracks with what you said about narrative versus factual retention.
So the trade-off is real. Audio gives you narrative flow, emotional arc, and spoken fluency. Text gives you factual precision, the ability to review, and better long-term retention for complex material. The mistake is assuming one is universally better.
Let me ground this with a concrete example. If I listen to a history podcast about the French Revolution, I'm going to come away with a sense of the story, the rising tension, the key figures, the emotional sweep of it. I'll remember that Robespierre ended up on the wrong side of his own terror. But if I read a history book, I'll have the footnotes, the maps, the ability to pause and check a date. I'll remember that the Committee of Public Safety was established in April 1793.
That's exactly the distinction. The podcast gives you the narrative structure. The book gives you the reference architecture. Both are learning, but they're different kinds of learning.
There's another piece here that Daniel mentioned, the integration with other activities. He listens while running, I listen while doing, well, not much, I'm a sloth. But the point stands, audio lets you learn during dead time.
And this is where the dual task interference literature comes in, and it's not flattering. When you're doing something else while listening, driving, running, chores, your attention is split. Comprehension drops significantly when audio is consumed during a moderately demanding concurrent task. If you're running, your brain is managing your pace, your breathing, your environment. Some of the cognitive resources that would be processing the audio are diverted.
So the integration that makes audio so convenient is also degrading the learning.
It depends on the task. Driving on a straight highway with no traffic, that's probably fine. Navigating a complex recipe while listening to a dense economics podcast, you're going to miss a lot. The research shows that the more cognitively demanding the secondary task, the worse the comprehension.
What about note-taking? Daniel mentioned that as a perceived downside. You can't highlight an audiobook.
You can't, but you can do other things. Voice notes are the obvious alternative. Pause and dictate a summary into your phone. Some apps now have built-in voice note features that timestamp your notes to the audio. There's also a technique called active recall during pauses. You mentally summarize what you just heard before moving on. it's actually more effective than highlighting, which research shows is one of the least effective study strategies.
Highlighting feels productive, but it's mostly just coloring.
It's almost entirely coloring. Active recall, forcing yourself to retrieve information from memory, is far more effective. And audio can actually encourage that if you build in deliberate pauses, which is something we'll come back to.
So audio has real trade-offs. But if you know you prefer it, and you're not going to change, what's actually out there for you? Daniel asked about genres beyond podcasts and audiobooks.
The landscape is broader than most people realize, but it's also fragmented. You've got audiobooks, obviously. You've got informative podcasts like ours. But there are also audio courses. The Great Courses has audio-only versions of many of their lecture series. The catch is that most of those were originally designed for video with slides and visual aids. The audio version loses the diagrams.
So they're ports, not native audio experiences.
They're video courses with the video stripped out. The same is true of most MOOCs, Coursera, edX. They'll let you listen to the lectures as audio, but you're missing the visual components that were part of the original design.
Is there anything that's actually designed audio first?
Pimsleur, as we mentioned. There are also Audible originals that are produced specifically for audio. Some of them are more like radio documentaries than audiobooks. There are audio-first newsletters now. The Hustle has an audio edition, Morning Brew does audio briefings, and there's an emerging category of AI-generated audio summaries. Tools like Notebook LM can take a text document and generate a podcast-style conversation about it.
I've heard some of those. They're getting there.
They're getting there. The voices are good, the content is decent, but they lack the editorial judgment of a human-produced show. Still, for getting a quick overview of a long document, they're useful. SnipD is another one. It's a podcast app that uses AI to generate chapter markers and summaries, and it lets you highlight and save segments.
So there's a whole ecosystem forming around audio learning. But you said something earlier that stuck with me. There's no true audio-first equivalent of a MOOC. No platform that designs courses from the ground up for audio.
There isn't. And I think that's a genuine gap. Imagine a course designed with deliberate pauses for reflection, spatial audio cues to indicate transitions, interactive voice interfaces that let you ask questions or request clarification. The technology exists now. AI voice synthesis, voice interfaces, spatial audio, but nobody has built a platform.
That's a startup idea sitting right there.
It really is. The closest thing might be something like Clubhouse or Twitter Spaces, but those are live and social, not structured learning experiences.
Daniel also asked whether audio-first learners have a name or a common identity. Is there a community?
The term auditory learner is widely used, but as we've established, it's scientifically contested. The more precise term from the literature is auditory dominant modality preference that appears in the 2013 NCBI paper. You'll also see high auditory cognitive style in some educational psychology frameworks. But these are clinical terms, not identities.
Nobody's putting auditory dominant modality preference in their Twitter bio?
They're not. In practice, the community is fragmented. There are subreddits, r/audiobooks, r/podcasts, but those are organized around formats, not around the identity of being an audio learner. There's no unified community of people who say, I learn primarily through audio, and here's how I optimize for that.
Which is interesting, because the preference is common. I'd guess a significant portion of our audience shares it.
I'd guess most of our audience shares it. They're listening to a podcast about learning. But the identity hasn't coalesced, and maybe that's fine. Maybe the preference doesn't need to be an identity. It just needs to be a tool you use strategically.
So let's talk about that. How do you use this preference strategically, knowing what we now know about the trade-offs?
The first principle is to match the medium to the material. Use audio for narrative and procedural content where it excels. History, biography, language learning, anything with a strong story arc or emotional dimension. Switch to text for dense, factual, or reference material where you need to pause, reread, and check details.
So I shouldn't listen to a technical manual on audio.
You can, but you should treat it as a first pass, exposure and orientation, then follow up with text for depth. Audio is great for getting the lay of the land, understanding the big picture, the key concepts. Then you go to text to nail down the specifics.
That's a two-pass strategy. Audio for the map, text for the territory.
The second principle is to pair audio with active recall. Pause periodically and summarize what you just heard. Say it out loud. The act of retrieving and articulating the information strengthens the memory trace far more than passive listening.
Which is awkward if you're on a run, but you can do it mentally.
You can, or use voice notes. Most phones have a voice recorder. 30 seconds of summary after a chapter or a segment. The third principle is to exploit the effortless quality of audio for habit formation. Audio is the path of least resistance into a learning routine. You can listen while walking the dog, commuting, doing dishes. The consistency matters more than the modality. Someone who listens to educational content for 30 minutes a day, every day, is going to learn more than someone who reads intensively for 3 hours once a month.
The best learning system is the one you actually use.
That's the lesson. The real advantage isn't in the modality itself, it's in the self-knowledge. Knowing you prefer audio lets you design a learning system that you'll actually stick with. Consistency beats optimal modality every time.
And the danger is mistaking preference for superiority and closing off other modalities entirely.
Right. If you only ever learn through audio, you're missing out on the strengths of text. The ability to dive deep, to reference, to reread, and rethink. The ideal is probably a hybrid approach. Use audio for breadth and narrative, text for depth and precision.
There's something else here that I think is worth naming. The listener who prompted this episode, Daniel, is doing something smarter than he might realize. He's not defending his preference as an identity. He's examining it, asking what it actually does, and looking for ways to use it better. That's the right posture.
It is, and it's rare. Most people either defend their preferences as superior or feel guilty about them as weaknesses. The middle path, this is how I'm wired, let me understand it and work with it, is where the actual learning happens.
Hilbert, you've been quiet.
The 2013 study you mentioned, the one about lectures versus reading.
Yes?
I recorded a series of those, late 90s. Called The Audio Professor, college-level lectures on cassette tapes for commuters. I did the history of economic thought. Read Adam Smith passages in a fake British accent. It wasn't very good.
You were a voice actor.
For about 8 months. The pay was terrible. But here's the thing. The producer kept telling me to slow down and leave longer pauses. Not for dramatic effect, because listeners couldn't rewind easily on cassette. They had to process in real time. So we built in these unnatural gaps. 3-4 seconds of silence after every major point. For reflection.
Forced pauses.
Forced pauses. And the retention rates for those courses, they tracked this, they sent out quizzes, were actually higher than the video versions they released later. Same material, same instructor, but the audio with pauses outperformed the video.
So you're saying the limitation of not being able to rewind easily made people listen more carefully?
I'm saying we accidentally designed a better learning experience by being technologically limited. The pauses forced active processing. You couldn't just let it wash over you. You had to sit with the idea.
That directly challenges the assumption that audio's transience is a weakness.
The constraint was the feature. We didn't know it at the time. We were just trying to make the tapes work.
So the thing we've been treating as a downside, the inability to easily review, might actually be an advantage if you design for it.
If you design for it. Nobody does. Everyone just ports video to audio and calls it a day.
That's the gap I was talking about. An audio-first course with deliberate pauses, spatial cues, interactive voice, nobody's built it.
They won't. Too much work. Easier to film a lecture and strip the video.
The cassette tapes force good design by accident. The constraint created the quality.
Most constraints do. People just don't like them.
Hilbert, do you still have any of those tapes?
Somewhere. The Adam Smith ones are probably in a box. The accent was terrible. I sounded like a Dickens villain.
I'd pay to hear that.
No, you wouldn't.
That's a useful data point. The forced pauses improving retention. It points to something we haven't solved yet. If audio-first courses were designed from scratch for the medium, with deliberate pauses, spatial audio cues, interactive voice interfaces, would they outperform video courses for certain types of learning? The technology exists now. AI voice synthesis can generate natural-sounding narration with precise timing. Voice interfaces can let you ask questions or request clarification. Spatial audio can create a sense of presence and structure, but nobody has put it all together.
The cassette tapes were a happy accident. The question is whether we can do it on purpose.
And whether anyone will. The market seems to be moving in the opposite direction. Video is dominant. Audio is an afterthought. But the demand is there. People are listening to podcasts and audiobooks in massive numbers. The audience for audio-first learning exists.
The misconception I want to name is the idea that audio learning is worse because you can't take notes. The reality is that audio allows for different note-taking strategies. Voice notes, mental summaries during pauses, active recall, and the linear format can actually aid narrative comprehension in ways that text can't. The weakness isn't inherent to the medium. It's that we haven't designed for the medium's strengths.
The deeper misconception is, I'm an auditory learner, so I learn best through audio. The preference is real, but it doesn't predict outcomes. What predicts outcomes is whether you design a learning system that you'll actually use consistently, and whether you match the medium to the material.
The listener who prompted this episode is doing something right. He's using his preference as a lever for consistency, not as an identity to defend. That's the real takeaway. Know your bias, use it strategically, but don't let it become a cage.
If you're listening to this and realizing you have a learning preference you've never examined, visual, kinesthetic, whatever, send it in. We'll do a follow-up.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the cassette tape revelation and the terrible British accent we'll never hear.
You can find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.